So please welcome Matt Allison.
There are comedies and there are tragedies. This one's a tragedy. And the question today is, what glues people together? Well, I'm going to take college as an example. I spent 5 years there, but let me paint you a bit of background. So I came from South Dakota, and this place has approximately a ratio of corn stalk to human being, 150,000 to 1. And this place, you would do the normal thing, elementary school, middle school, and then beyond to college. And stepping there is a novelty, because where I went, South Dakota State University, which happened to be the largest college in the state, you get a lot of influx of people from different parts of the country and beyond internationally. So you have to take the straw out of your hair, and you have to take the corn out of your mouth, and you have to learn to speak and see again. Then, friends, where do they come from? What will unite you? This was the question. Well, beyond those people, I'm sure you can relate, there are those long walks on campus. There's the freshly cut green grass everywhere, uniform, and those long walks at night, if you're philosophical, under the stars with friends you've just met. Right in the center of this campus, there was a big rotunda made of brick, and it was surrounded by red roses. And what you would do in this rotunda is, beyond attending lectures, you would get people together to play music. You would also, when there wasn't music going on, you would have lecturers speak on different subjects like biology, psychology, chemistry, ecology, and a smatter of literature. Some of these rooms had 20 chairs for the graduate students, 165 for the freshmen. There was one subject that had 365 chairs. I'll let you guess which subject that was. And the idea of this whole rotunda and modern education is you go inside this circle, and you encircle it, and you attend your lectures, and you take your notes, and you pass the exams, and if you don't burn your couch but burn the midnight oil, you get to walk out the other side with a degree to blaze the trail in your chosen field in the future. Well, instead of going through this rotunda, I went to my local church. It was a small building, 150 years old. 12 people went there. But for some reason, it was a magnet or a flame for the freshmen like myself of a certain bent. You would walk in a very small nave, very brief entrance to the pews, which were made of wood, very tall stained glass windows on both sides that you would sit in the pew for, and up high above a vaulted ceiling where dust would fall on the bridge of your nose, and you would hear the same pastor, this was a gifted man, speak the same message, Sunday in and Sunday out, the rounds of the week. And it was of a particular interpretation on a certain text. It was a Calvinist theory of the predestination of souls. And it was very entrancing for a 19-year-old without identity anymore and without friends, and all of us together could see that our very souls before our genes could be predestined before the foundation of the earth, we would quote. And this gave us a united, bonded purpose, we thought. So we would attend these sermons, and then we'd go into the basement and eat our breakfast together with 11 other people that had been there since they went to college, at the same college. Now they were well-to-do, well in their age, with children who were also attending the same sermon on Sunday, the same exact message on Sunday. And this church was surrounded by white lilies. And after eating that breakfast, which strangely enough, it was always a casserole, though the ingredients would change, the casserole remained the same. And together we would digest the sermon's theme over this meal. And it was always revolving around particular texts that you'll hear about soon. And then after that 2 to 3 hour lunch together, we left the church and walked to the Yellow House. This was a very important place in Brookings, South Dakota. This bright yellow painted house like a bee, surrounded by weeds because college students like myself lived there. We had a bat upstairs in the attic, a real bat, and we would meet there and do what college students do when their pastor isn't looking. We would play Go Fish. We would play Uno. We would watch reruns of The Office. We would see Monty Python reruns over and over and over again. And then we would do the main event, which was Bible study. And this was proving ground for my friends and I, because while we were friends and united, there was always that eyebrow lifted to see who was the most devout, because there was always the chance that your soul wasn't predestined. Our eyes looked with fervent attention over well-known passages, like maple syrup drawn out from the bottom of the bottle, our favorite passage to argue over, because we did argue fervently, both boys and girls. We were the sort of people that we would separate the boys from the girls at lunch and dinner, because we thought that's how, under the infinite gaze of God, this was how it was supposed to be. But in Bible study, it was all about which piece of iron could sharpen the other piece of iron the best. And we would look at our favorite passage, which happened to be the Sunday text every single Sunday, John 3:16. I won't quote it. But the idea was that there was a certain love given out for everlasting life, but we couldn't help but with our Calvinistic, a reflex bent of mind to say, well, the world in the text is not the world itself. There's an elite group of people, elite group of smart students that have figured it all out because they have the guru nearby. And we really know that the world of John 3:16 is not the billions plus. It's us with the straw in our hair and the corn in our mouth. And, well, possibly it's only me. So the other person to my left and so the other person to my right said. And this continued for years. Remember, I was a student. The goal is to go from your broad perspective, general major, to a discipline. First year passed, second did as well, third was quite fast on its heels, fourth went around. You saw your friends leave into engineering schools, you saw your friends leave into biomedical engineering, you saw your friends become accountants. And then the dreaded fifth year comes like an old boot dropped at your front door, and you realize, oh my God, I'm a fifth-year student with no degree to my name, and so are my friends. But we had our yellow house, and we had our church with the lilies, drifting. I was panicking, because not only did I have 5 years with nothing to show but a belief, a particular belief in God, but I had student debt amounting and arising and amassing, and it was a tower of Babel, all our 5 years of babbling over John 3:16. So I was panicking, and I needed advice. So I went to my best friend, who was the one on my right in those Bible studies. He was the resident philosopher. I'll say his name is Brian. Brian had all the answers. I went up to Brian. He had glasses. And I said, Brian, I am lost. What do I do? I'm 5 years deep in the hole with no direction in my life. And he said, Matthew, don't you know? God has a plan and providence for all. He gave us his only begotten son, John 3:16. He even, like a click, quoted it at the end. It was exactly what I wanted to hear, but it would not put the finger on the curriculum and finish the classes for me. So I did the only thing I and my spirit knew to do. I let my feet carry me to the local library, right to the right of the rotunda on campus. And it was 12 o'clock at night, midnight. And I walked down the aisles just lost, wanting an answer from books, because that's all I knew, provided the voice. And for some reason, I came to three shelves. That was the extent and depth and breadth of the philosophy section in South Dakota. And for some reason, I bent the knee at the third bottom shelf, and one of these books were glimmering, I swear to you. Sometimes books do. I picked it out, and it was called Fear and Trembling. It looked like nothing. I mean, the desk jacket was cardboard. The last time it was checked out was 1962. The pages were yellow like leaves fallen from nutritious branches. I read the first sentence. This was a Danish theologian who wasn't a theologian. He was a philosopher who wasn't a philosopher. He was actually a fiction writer. Third sentence down, I was hooked. I ran home, 2 o'clock in the morning. I stayed awake like Martin Luther at his tower, devouring Fear and Trembling. Now, really quickly, I'll give you the pensées of it. You know the story of Abraham. He's called by God to go to the top of a mountain with his son and offer up his son as his greatest sacrifice. 3 days he was on the horse with his son, and there he goes to the top, and he bandages his son together, and he lifts the knife, and the angel comes down and says, "Stop, Abraham. We know you love God, and God loves you, so put down the knife. Everything is provided for." Well, that's all fine, but Soren Kierkegaard asked, what was going through Abraham's mind during that three-day journey? What goes on in your mind during your journey with the one you're banded with? When you are asked by a voice that is invisible, or that isn't a voice, to break away. Kierkegaard said famously, if I could do one thing, I wouldn't go to Antarctica, I wouldn't go to China, I wouldn't see any marvel. I would keep the straw in my hair and the corn cob in my mouth, and I would hitch up my own horse next to Abraham and ask him questions along the way. Because in himself, he contained all the dramas and all the mythologies that we look for in the world. And something fell away, and something grew up that night. I went straight to the study of my pastor, opened the door of his room I would have never treaded in, where angels are 11 people feared to tread. 100 books. He was eating Taco John's. We don't have that here, but it's a fast food restaurant. He's a wonderful man. He's very smart. I know him to this day. But I looked him in the eye and I said, my soul isn't predestined. I don't know if I have a soul, but I have a will and a choice. I didn't mention Kierkegaard because I did not want to sound like a fanboy, but... But I said, I am not a robot, and I will walk out today. And I did. And he got up. He was starting to say something that started with an R and ended with an 8, reprobate, or I always knew you were always and the door slammed behind me, and my friends looked at me, not with the other cheek to the side, but with different jaundiced eyes. We always knew he was the goat among sheep. And at a strange time as well, I got a letter from the federal government saying, no more. No more chips to the pile. No more subsidized education. It's funny how these things are coincidental. And I said, that's all right. I'll go my own way. Even if I'm not on the shoulder of another or on someone's back, I will go my own way. And I've got this voice. I have this writer named Soren Kierkegaard. And maybe, just maybe, I'll do that too. Thank you.